Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for March 24th, 2024. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and we are here in full WrestleMania season. And that means WrestleMania. That means a bunch of independent shows. That means NXT Stand and Deliver. So tonight, we are going to focus our efforts on the card for Stand and Deliver as it stands right now. And we are going to talk about half of the WrestleMania matches that have been announced, leaving the other half for next week, because next week is going to be just like WrestleMania, too big for one night. So is the WrestleMania preview edition of Wrestling Night in America, too big for one night. So we're going to spread it over two nights. Tonight, next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, PWTorchDailyCast.com. And then, of course, WrestleMania weekend, we will be going on the air right after WrestleMania goes off the air for both nights of WrestleMania. That's night one on Saturday and night two on Sunday night, recapping and discussing with you, the callers and the emailers, all of the action that took place on those nights. So if you want to participate, 515-605-9345 is the number to call. WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you can find our email address to send questions. Certainly next weekend, I know it's going to be a late start that we are on. So if you want to email in your thoughts on WrestleMania and then head right to bed and hear us discuss it the next day, that's fine too. Just a reminder, you can find me on social media at Greg M. Parks. And I'm pleased to bring aboard my co-host for this week. And it is former PW Torch assistant editor and current grand poobah of Brass Ring Media, Zach Haydorn. Did I get your title right, Zach? I just want to make sure.
I got to get the business cards changed now, Greg. I got to get them changed. That's perfect. Thank you for having me. I've been looking forward to this all weekend, and I'm super pumped to be hosting the show again with you. So thanks for the ask, and I know we got a lot to get to, so this should be fun.
Absolutely. We have a ton to get to. And so let's start with Stand and Deliver. We'll run down that card, then we'll go to some calls and emails, and then hit WrestleMania. Now, we have four matches for Stand and Deliver. Let's start with the tag title match that we don't really know the complete picture yet. Baron Corbin and Bron Breakker will defend against either the LWO, Nathan Frazier, and Axiom, or the OC, depending on who comes out of the elimination tournament as the challengers to the tag titles. The Corbin Breaker team, Zach, has made for some oddly interesting television. They have a strange sort of entertaining chemistry together. Is there a team that stands out amongst the LWO, Frazier, and Axiom, or the OC that you either would like to see against Breaker and Corbin, or you think would create the best or most intriguing matchup against those two?
First of all, I've enjoyed parts of the Corbin Breaker team. I mean, I think going into that, I certainly was of the mindset of, I roll left, I roll right. Like, how is this going to work? But they've turned it into something. Like, is it a main event act? No. Is it something that I think can last for, you know, 5 years time? No, probably not. But I think, like, you know, they've caught lightning in a bottle in a lot of ways. And as long as they kind of like don't overdo it and don't overrun it, I think it's a decent little NXT, upper mid card gimmick. As for their challengers, it's pretty weak, to be honest. Like, and as much as I'd like to like predict that, hey, Breaker and Corbin have to lose these titles at some point, because and the reason I bring that up is Breaker is getting some feature packages on SmackDown. I mean, clearly he's going to be, you know, a player there at some point in 2024, I'd imagine, based on how they've kind of presented him on that show so far. It doesn't do great things for your presentation to be like saddled in a NXT tag team with Baron Corbin at the same time. So by that, I think, okay, they got to drop these titles pretty soon, but boy, neither one of those three teams feel like, you know, kind of, I don't know, quote unquote, worthy of defeating the Wolf Dogs right now. So I don't think that either of them there kind of jump out as potential winners, but I think the best matchup, you know, I like the LWO and the Axiom Nathan Frazier team are kind of where I'm at on this, just because I think stylistically they counter, you know, the Wolf Dogs so well, and I think both could have a pretty intriguing match. So I think I kind of lean their direction for both of those reasons. I'll say LWO just because of there's a bit more star power there. I mean, Axiom and Frazier have been, you know, almost jobber level. So I'll take LWO, but with the caveat that it's pretty slim pickings.
I can't imagine another scenario where I would pick the OC over the LWO or Frazier and Axiom in any real way. But man, that kind of intrigues me. Because you've got Gallows and Anderson, who are this big, hard-hitting duo, and you've got Breaker and Corbin, who are this big, hard-hitting duo. And so there is part of me that says, well, the LWO and Frazier and Axiom probably both get a better match out of Corbin and Breaker from a star rating standpoint, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think in an era where the fans, and myself included, want these big guys just throwing bombs at each other in the ring, I think there is some real underrated intrigue in, you know, if Gallows and Anderson have their working boots on and having them in there against Corbin and Breaker, just like, you know, the big meaty men slapping meat, maybe not too big, maybe like a half of that, but still it has that meat potential, I guess I'll say, for that match. So that does intrigue me. And I never thought I would necessarily pick the OC in a match like this over Axiom and Frazier or the LWO. Am I crazy here?
Yeah, no, I don't think you are. I really don't. I mean, I those guys are like kind of on that level in terms of like, okay, are you gonna beat Breaker and Corbin, and are you gonna, you know, get a push as tag team champions? I mean, maybe, because there's a little bit of name value there potentially, but you know, the OC's been just defined so down too, and you never really know these days what you're going to get out of them in the ring. But certainly if that duo is motivated, I mean, they have it in them to have like some good matches. I mean, you know, there's been a taste of it throughout the years in WWE, but certainly away from WWE, they've been able to bring it. So I don't know. I mean, do you think that the OC holding the tag titles is like potentially a good thing for them in that brand? Like, if you're going to have like one of your NXT tag teams like chase them, like, I just, and I ask that because like, it just doesn't seem like the Corbin Breaker thing is going to last like long enough that you almost want to maybe get it on a team like the OC to just kind of move things along. So I don't know, now that we like break this thing down, it may not hurt to get those titles on a team like that, because nobody else is really like knocking on the door. Like, I almost think like if Chase U was in this more seriously, okay, maybe you could use that as a way to like, you know, as a way to finally like put them over big and finish that whole saga, you know, and have them, you know, win those titles again potentially. But man, yeah, the more that I'm thinking about it here, it's like maybe you want it on like those just veterans who are gonna do their thing down there and that's it until you find, you know, that next team that you want to really, really go with.
I do think the OC is underutilized in WWE. Now, whether or not that qualifies them to be worthy NXT tag team champions, I'm not really sure. I do think you have that issue that you brought up earlier where Bron Breakker is on the main roster. He's getting these vignettes. He's winning squash matches in dominant fashion. Seems like WWE is positioning him for a big push probably after WrestleMania. Doesn't look like he's going to have anything for WrestleMania, especially being on the stand and deliver card as he is. Do you want to have him lose the titles? You know, you could have Baron Corbin get pinned, for example, and it doesn't hurt Breaker all that much. Then you sever the ties. You bring Breaker permanently up to the main roster and divorce him from NXT completely. But the other side of that, too, is if you are going to have him lose the tag titles, better perhaps from a presentation standpoint or from a how people view him standpoint to lose them to a main roster tag team in the OC than, say, an Axiom and Nathan Frazier, who are awesome, but they don't have the same recognition that the OC does. So maybe that's some of the thought process. Maybe we're putting more thought into it than WWE or NXT has, but that's kind of my roundabout way of answering your question, I think.
No, I mean, I think that makes sense. Yeah. It's like, in theory, you look at this and you go, OC? Like, no. Like, and that was my initial reaction. Like, the better match can be with those other teams. And, you know, they've just kind of been around NXT right now. Like, they've done a little. I mean, and they position themselves well in this whole thing for the tag titles, but it's certainly not the focus of anything. But yeah, like, it's almost like because there's lack of better options, it's like, okay, go with the guys who maybe are most recognizable and hope that, you know, by the time another team's ready to go, you know, you've got something either way with the OC that you can get a little bit more out of. So, I mean, I think you've convinced me. I think you've sold me on the OC. I didn't think this was possible, Greg, but congratulations.
Well, that wasn't necessarily my intent. I wasn't intending to sell you on it, but I mean, hey, you know, I tried to make the argument best I could as to what I was seeing. So, that sounds good. I mean, anyway is fine on that. I don't think it's going to matter all that much in the grand scheme of things.
Lyra
Valkyria versus Roxanne Perez for the NXT Women's Championship. We'll talk about next. You know, Roxanne Perez turned heel, which is still jarring to see. I think Roxanne is doing as good a job as she can with the material she's given, but it does feel like stereotypical heel women's wrestler. You know, there's nothing.
Yeah.
I don't feel like the character is bringing anything new to the table from a heel perspective. And when you consider how good she was as a babyface, if you're going to turn her, I feel like you just needed to offer something different. But I guess that comes back to, and I know that we're kind of getting away from the match itself here, but the philosophical idea of what NXT is supposed to be. And is it, do you want it to be this place where wrestlers prepare themselves for the main roster and prepare themselves and try out different things? In this case, Roxanne Perez, obviously very good as a babyface, but in order to be well-rounded and in order to prepare yourself for the main roster where there's, you know, babyface and heel turns, they want you to practice being a heel, basically, is what it is. You know, that's kind of almost how I view what they're doing with her. And I'm not sure if on a nationally televised show that's really the best. Even, you know, I think it goes back to the struggle of what NXT is. You know, it's developmental, but it's not because they have a lot of main roster stars, but it's a lot of trainees who don't have a lot of matches under the belt, but it's national televised audience. So, I mean, how do you view the Roxanne Perez turn in terms of that lens?
I mean, it's really curious. I think it's it's kind of, I find it like uncomfortable to watch her kind of try to be a heel because, I mean, as to your point, she's just such a natural babyface. She's just likable. People, I think, know her story a little bit too, like outside of the ring and her like real life, her like kind of journey to WWE. And she's just a likable character. I think the Roxanne Perez character, generally speaking, was something that people were willing to invest in as a babyface, like openly and willingly. And you don't get that all the time in 2024 with babyfaces. And so to see her kind of like go through the motions here and like, you know, okay, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that and I'm going to do that because that's what a heel is supposed to do. It's fine. And I think you can say to yourself, okay, yeah, Roxanne Perez can play the heel part well. She can go out there and she can execute the steps that she's being asked to do. But the problem is she hasn't been able to convince me and in my opinion, like the audience either, that she really is this unlikable heel character that you want to get behind and root against and see lose. Like, I think people and audiences are seeing through this idea that she's a heel, and I think that they're accepting her heel work for exactly what you said, which is just, okay, well, she's being asked to be a heel, so okay, we'll kind of go through the motions just like she is. But I don't think that there's any sort of deep investment in Perez as a heel, and I think it's just, it's kind of hard because she is so likable. This idea of what NXT is, I think matters a lot. And in terms of this conversation specifically, but others too, other instances with other talent. And I like somebody like Bron Breakker when he turned heel, it was, I think you saw like a good, what was that? Like a good 18 month, 2 year run as a babyface, you know, from him before he turned heel. Like, it felt like he had done all there was to do in NXT as a babyface. So if you still want to be like a promotion and part of the WWE kind of world that is a place where people can learn new things and try new things, that's fine. But Roxanne Perez, it's like, I don't think she's scratched the surface really yet of what that babyface run could be. Like, she hasn't really had a chance to put that out there long enough. She won the title as a babyface, but then took a lot of time off TV, and then she lost the title quickly. And I just don't think was able to find her footing yet. So she's trying this heel stuff, but I just think there's like so much left for her to do as a babyface and to get that character down and get that character in front of fans first that she just hasn't really done. So I think you want an NXT ultimately where you can go out there and, you know, try some new things and get your talent to work on certain things and get better in certain areas. But for somebody that is as important as Roxanne Perez, I think will be to the WWE in 5 years, I would have, you know, treated her with white gloves and make sure that we're not putting her in a position where she just can't succeed. And I kind of feel like that's where she is now, even though she tries really hard.
More specifically, this match, I will say Lyra Valkyria, when they put the title on her, I was really, boy, I don't know, that sort of came out of left field in some ways for me. And, you know, she wasn't someone who was pushed for a long time on NXT television, who you could kind of say had, quote unquote, earned it based on her performance week in and week out. But I thought she had really done a very nice job being the standard bearer of the women's division. And in NXT, that comes with a lot of weight. I mean, you look at some of the women who have come before her as NXT champions, from Shayna Baszler to Asuka and others who had really dominating performances as champions. And I think she's carried on in that legacy very well. The stuff lately with Tatum Paxley, though, is a miss for me, and that might be a kind way of putting it. So I'm kind of hoping it comes to a head here at Stand and Deliver. Maybe we get the blow off of that at the next show, and then we can kind of move on, because I really feel it's bringing Valkyria down from someone who was, as I said, a real standard bearer of the women's division to kind of this play feud, not feud with Tatum Paxley, that's kind of gone off in some strange directions.
Couldn't agree more. I really, you know, I like what Valkyria has done as champion, and it was kind of out of the blue. And I think that kind of title run can go one of two ways. Like, either, you know, you can get the title and do what she did, which is kind of like run with that and use it to elevate her star power and to kind of like be, as you said, the top of the women's division and do that effectively, or you can kind of just have this title and walk around with it, but nobody really kind of sees you in that role. And she's definitely the former. Like, I think that as surprising as it was, she's turned this title reign into her own, and she's had some really good matches. And I think the match with Roxanne Perez is the, you know, as much as I have been against the Roxanne Perez heel turn, this match I think is a smart one to do at Stand and Deliver. I mean, it's the biggest women's match you can do in NXT right now. And so for the biggest show, that's the way you go. So I like the match. I'm with you on the Tatum Paxley thing as well. Like, that is, I don't think that Lyra Valkyria is like a character that really can pull that off that well. Like, I don't buy and never have bought that these two are just really close friends, like, or they have such like a deep, you know, a deep relationship with one another. Like, it just, for whatever reason, like, that element is not clicking, which makes everything that happens around it like really kind of pointless. Like, if you're not buying the premise of this story, then it's like, well, you know, all the details kind of just, as you said, miss. So I'm with you as far as that goes. I thought Tatum Paxley last week had a decent little match. It was short and probably her best showing, but boy, that's a very, very low bar to clear. Yeah. I would get away from that as quick as possible. Sure. Go to that match just so you can kind of put a bow on that whole thing. But to me, the lane that you want to ride in with Valkyrie is just, she's the champion. She's a fighting babyface champion. And I don't think you need to get too cute. Just stick with that. Yeah. And I think you got something.
Well, if you're just tuning in, this is Wrestling Night in America. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, along with the head of Brass Ring Media, Zach Haydorn. And we are talking NXT Stand and Deliver, and a little later on, some of the matches that have already been announced for WrestleMania. So let's go to the phones here. Start with the 814 area code. It is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. What's your first question for us tonight?
First question is about Rey Mysterio and Dominic Mysterio. Do you see Rey getting to shave his son's head at WrestleMania, since I heard that there could be a hair versus career match this year based on last year's match?
Yeah, I mean, Zach, it does feel like they're heading in the direction of Dominic versus Rey again. I don't know if it's going to be at this year's WrestleMania. It does kind of feel like there's not a ton of time to properly build what that match should mean, given the history, given the relationship, given the stipulations that have been rumored, as Ryan mentioned. You'd kind of like to see that get a little more time and a little more focus than it's going to get on a WrestleMania card that's already, I don't want to say bloated, because I think that's a negative connotation, but it's got a lot of big, important matches on it. And if you do Rey and Dom career versus hair, or mask versus hair, or whatever you want to do, I don't think you want it to be just a match that kind of gets lost in the shuffle. So, I mean, what do you think? If it's not WrestleMania, is there a place that do you think they can draw it out to SummerSlam? Do you think they, I mean, where would you do a match of that caliber? And maybe it is WrestleMania.
Well, I mean, it certainly can fit at WrestleMania, just not this WrestleMania. I mean, there's just not enough time to tell that story well enough. I mean, like, you've got such a history there, and they did such a nice job with that match last year at WrestleMania. I mean, in that, when you think about that feud last year and, you know, where it went, kind of wrapping up, I suppose, in one way at WrestleMania, I mean, that went on for months and months, and it had pauses and it had restarts, and Rey went to a different brand for a while. Like, it just was like a really intricate and I thought well done story. And then, you know, and then the match itself, I thought really kind of paid that off nicely. And yes, it wasn't like your main event, but they got a lot out of that. And I think, you know, a lot of the heat that Dominic gets today is, you know, that feud and that match is responsible for a lot of that. So, you know, if you're going to go back to it, I like the idea. I like the stipulation. I think, you know, there's still, you know, Rey still could, you know, do a job to his son on his way out the door. If that's what he wants to do, you still have that on the table, but I don't think you want to wedge it in. I really don't think you want to wedge it in on 2 weeks' notice. Like, this is a match to me that could be, you know, top four match at SummerSlam, or, you know, a top, you know, five or six match at WrestleMania next year if you do it right. So I don't have a problem with the match by any means, but, you know, WrestleMania is 2 weeks away. So there's just not enough time to shoehorn it in. And there's a lot of other things that WWE needs to get done to, you know, make the announced matches continue to simmer a little bit. So I think you're just, like, just playing with too many chefs in the kitchen at that point. So I would hold off, but I do like the match quite a bit.
Ryan, back to you for your second question for us tonight.
The second question is on the Hall of Fame with The Rock's grandmother going into the Hall of Fame. I heard Brian Last, who's Jim Cornette's co-host say that he believes Dixie Carter will be going into the WWE Hall of Fame in the next 3 to 5 years. Do you believe that?
I would have a hard time believing that. I'm not sure if that was said in jest or was said seriously. I can't imagine really what incentive there is. Obviously, the incentive to put The Rock's grandmother in is to get a Rock promo out there and utilize him while you have him. But I don't see this burning desire to, unless not even that. Like I was going to say, I know that they have a woman that they like to be inducted every year and things like that. But I just have a hard time seeing that happen. You know, and Triple H is in charge now of the inductions, so we don't really know his philosophy when it comes to choosing people from the Hall of Fame. This year seems to be pretty legit, maybe more legit than in some years that we've seen in the years past. And we know that Triple H is a real student of history and appreciates that aspect of it. So if anyone is going to take Hall of Fame selections seriously, it's probably Triple H. And if that's the case, like, I don't see him seeing Dixie Carter as someone who either is her body of work is worthy of going in the Hall of Fame, or there's any kind of like financial incentive or anything like that to put her in the Hall of Fame, which is the other thing you have to look at when you think of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't see this happening. Like, unless for some reason, you know, Dixie Carter, you know, joins the WWE in some way, which I also don't see happening.
It's not like the deals they used to make for promoters where, you know, we put you in the Hall of Fame if you sold us our tapes. I don't think Dixie owns any TNA tapes,
right,
that they need to get a hold of.
Exactly. Like, I just, you know, I mean, on multiple levels, I just don't think this works. One, I think you're right. Like, I just don't know that she has a resume that would lend itself to even being considered. Like, even if you take away the fact that it's Impact Wrestling, it's a competitor to WWE, and she's not involved in WWE, even if you take that all away, I just don't know that her resume really, you know, stacks up, even in that instance. So that, coupled with all of the other realities that come with her, you know, and her relationship with WWE and lack thereof, I'll believe that one when I see it.
Stranger things have happened, but not many,
in
the world of professional wrestling.
Yep.
All right, Ryan, your third and final question for us tonight.
Final question's on NXT. When it moves to CEW, do you see it being on the road on, like, smaller arenas, or do you think it will just remain in Florida like it is now?
Yeah, that's a good question. There always seems to be every 6 months or so talk of, well, you know, should the NXT brand go on the road to arenas? And that comes with a tremendous cost to WWE. And I'm not sure if, you know, the CW, even though it's network television, I'm not sure that the viewership is going to be anything approaching what they get on USA. I mean, it may be maybe a little more, but is that going to be worth the expense of going on the road every week? Like, I don't see it. You know, their fans have come to expect the NXT television show taking place inside a small, intimate arena. I don't know if WWE may feel pressure from the CW to go on the road, because they may have some say in the production of the show or may be able to cover some of it. I'm not sure the intimate details of the deal that they've carved out. But, I mean, what's your take, Zach? If money were no object, going on the road is always the better option than having the same 200 people in a small studio setting every week. But the reality is, especially under the TKO banner, they're looking to make as much money as possible while maybe not spending as much. So that's something, that's the realities of the WWE business as it stands right now. So what's your take, Zach, on the idea of NXT going on the road when they get to the CW?
I mean, look, I think you're right. All in a in a world where there's no like budgets to worry about and no dollars to worry about, yeah, I mean, it definitely would be nice to get them out on the road, even if it's at, like, a small loop like they do now on, like, the house show circuit down there in Florida. Like, I don't know that that brand ever needs to be kind of crossing the country to do those shows. But, you know, being in front of a live audience that's not the same every week certainly has its benefits. But, I mean, there's also loads of benefits outside of the budget to keeping the tapings at the Performance Center. And one of those things is, like, they're putting some people on TV that, you know, sometimes you can watch a match of theirs or a promo of theirs, and you're like, man, like, this person, like, good shot, but, you know, probably don't have any business being on television. And, like, a live audience could, like, eat that alive, you know, if WWE's not careful. Here, they've got, like, a supremely, like, protected environment. If you want to run out, you know, like, a brand new act or somebody that's been at the Performance Center for a long time, and it's like, okay, we want to see what they have here. Like, they are in a just perfect position to be able to manage a lot of that reaction and what they ask the talent to do. So from a perspective of NXT being like a true, like, learning ground, obviously, yes, you need to perform in front of crowds, and you know, the NXT house shows are a obvious way to do that. But, man, for, like, making a television debut and being on TV and working on, like, you know, your skills as a wrestler, like, I think it does help to just do that with the protection of, you know, being in a protected environment. So I think that factors into outside of just, oh, it costs a lot, which it does. But I think there's even more reasons than that to not go.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't really thought of that, but it is absolutely true that, you know, you get a rough live crowd that wants to come in, not necessarily take over the show, but not be as respectful of the level that these performers are at than what they're used to at this performance center, then it could get pretty ugly pretty quick. Ryan, thanks for the phone call this week. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call.
Of course. And we've got Reverend Keith up next, but before we get to him, I want to finish off Stand and Deliver with you here, Zach. Trick Williams versus Carmelo Hayes. You know, this could jockey for the main event over the title match. I think it has a good argument for main eventing Stand and Deliver over the title match. The big thing this is missing, though, is the title. You know, the whole Trick Williams Carmelo Hayes feud has been about, you know, can Trick Williams win the big one? Is Carmelo Hayes going to, you know, Carmelo trying to kind of trip him up with plausible deniability of getting the title and things like that? And now, yeah, it's a grudge match and it's a match people want to see, but it does feel a little less than, because the title is not involved, when you could have easily had Trick Williams win the title at the NXT last pay-per-view over Dragunov and have Carmelo do the same thing. Carmelo turns on him after the match and, you know, you get to a title match here. So do you think that should have been the way they went? Or do you think, you know, you're kind of getting two big matches instead of one, because now you've got the title match with Dragunov and D'Angelo that we'll talk about next, and you have this other big match, so you've got two selling points instead of one for people to watch what NXT claims is their biggest show of the year.
Yeah, that argument makes sense for sure, but I would have had the title involved in the Trick Williams Carmelo Hayes program. And then they had correct me if I'm wrong, but they could have had another shot at that, right? Like, didn't Carmelo Hayes and Ilya Dragunov have a match after the last pay-per-view, or am I misremembering things there? I might be going crazy.
I can't.
I don't know. Either way, like, I think that it doesn't need the title, because obviously they've done it without it, and it's still, you know, one of the better things on NXT television and really, like, a good program, like, start to finish. But I think it would benefit so much more if the title was – was involved and on the line. I mean, that's part of the story is that championship, you know, between the two of them, like Carmelo Hayes being champion and Trick being in the background. And then, you know, Melo not being okay with Williams ahead of him, you know, in line to, you know, win the championship, and that just not jiving. I mean, that really is like the essence of the feud. So I think it totally works without the title, but if the title was on the line, I think you're looking at like, yes, it's more of a one match show if that was the case, but you're also looking at like a true main event for said show. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, I'm picking that over kind of diluting that in order to have two big matches.
Yeah, it is strange how it's played out without the title, given, again, that was, you know, part of the buildup to Hayes and Trick Williams to this point. Are you surprised the way that Trick Williams has taken off as a star? Like, I didn't really see this coming. I didn't see him being embraced totally in the way that he's been embraced by the NXT audience.
I didn't either. I really didn't either. I mean, there were pieces of it there, and I always thought that he was good, you know, as a babyface like he is now, but behind Carmelo Hayes. And to see him kind of come out of his shell and not only be a part of this program with Carmelo Hayes, but really carry his end of the bargain, you know, like it hasn't been all Hayes. You know, he's done what he's needed to. He's, you know, I thought the promo this week on the show was effective and telling as to what his, you know, future could be as a babyface in the company. It came out of nowhere, but it's also, if you're Triple H and you're Shawn Michaels, like, and you're like out there advocating for the system that you have in how to build talent, like he is like a top guy that you would point out and go, look, it worked this way for him. He started off just as this like background, you know, manager position almost, and worked his way up over to 2 years. And now he's going to be, you know, in one of the main events of the big show. So I think, yes, it's surprising, but it doesn't feel forced either. It doesn't feel like it's like, all right, well, Shawn Michaels has decided, all right, we're going to push this guy no matter what. And he's either not ready or not over. It's like, no, like he's, you know, pushed at the level I think that he should be based on the reactions and work that he's doing. And that's, you know, that's what you want ultimately. So, I'm surprised too, but you know, when you look at the body of work, it's, you know, I would have greenlit this push too.
Yeah. The title match, as briefly mentioned a minute ago, Ilya Dragunov versus the Don, Tony D'Angelo. I've loved what Dragunov has done as champion. I love the suit wearing, you know, guy who just kicks your butt day in and day out. And, you know, the mind games to a certain extent that he played, especially with Baron Corbin and things like that. I think he's really shown in this role as champion. He's really stepped up with his mic work, with his character work. We knew he could do it in the ring, but his presentation as champion, I've been impressed with. The Tony D'Angelo as his opponent, you know, for a show, as I mentioned earlier, that NXT kind of considers, hey, you know, it's WrestleMania weekend. WrestleMania is WWE's biggest event. Stand and Deliver has got to be our biggest event. Kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, he had been sort of a background player a little bit, done some stuff in tag teams a little bit, and only in recent weeks has sort of reorganized his family and been at the forefront once again. You know, this is not, it's not new territory for him. He's gotten title matches before. He's been in the title picture before. But I just think it's a little, maybe jarring isn't the word, but for him to come from where he has been in the recent months to being a challenger at Stand and Deliver of all shows. I mean, this isn't just, you know, some pay-per-view in the summer that NXT is trying to sell. It's their biggest event of the year. I would have thought maybe there would have been a little bit more foresight to go with him in this role and to push him in that. I mean, again, maybe because he has that experience already, NXT isn't so worried about, you know, building him over months to be at this position as challenging for the title, but it did seem to come a little bit out of nowhere to me.
Me too. And I also, you know, it makes me think that because Tony D'Angelo is the opponent for Dragunov, that you really might see the Hayes-Williams match go on in the main event slot, just because it's not like a title defense for Dragunov at this point, just based on where Tony D'Angelo has been for the last, you know, really like, you know, six to 12 months. Like, he has not been like this main event guy. He's been in tag teams and kind of like in the middle of the card doing his thing and you know, part of some decent television, but just not pushed at a level that, you know, you'd think in the title match in the biggest show of the year for the brand. But in a co-main event type spot, you know, and not being the match that is going to be leaned on to really like carry this show, because you do have Trick Williams versus Carmelo Hayes up there. Like, it's a decent way, I thought, to like reframe D'Angelo. He's been more serious. He's been more, I think his promos have come across more serious and less, or I guess as serious as you can get with the gimmick that they're trying to get over. But, you know, it's been less about like kind of funny vignettes and more about like him being this serious, you know, I'm going to do anything to win boss character. And I think that has worked better for him and has shown a different, I think it's elevated kind of the ceiling that D'Angelo had. I don't think he's going to be winning the title here, but I think I can like take that thought more seriously than I could have, you know, a month ago. So yeah, I mean, I think this is a match put together because of the circumstances around it. I mean, you've got a big time women's title match, you've got a you know, a big time grudge match, and so I think this can be like a third from the top match or co-main event slot and be just fine surrounded like by what it's surrounded by. If this was, you know, if this had to be the main event and there was nothing else, then I think you'd really have a problem. But for what this is going to be, I think this works and gives Ilya Dragunov another, you know, another notch on the belt, another successful title defense, and, you know, on you go from there.
Kind of the argument we'd make when it was Royal Rumble season. And you'd say, well, you can get away with having a lesser than challenger for the WWE title or the world title because the Rumble matches themselves are what draw. And so it's sort of like in this case, in that comparison, Trick Williams versus Carmelo Hayes is your Rumble match for this show. You know, that's your draw. So you can kind of get away with having a somewhat lesser title match or a title match that doesn't feel like a stand and deliver title match necessarily. So I guess that's kind of how I would compare it. And we'll see. That is the stand and deliver card so far. I'll go back to the phones here and then we'll talk about WrestleMania, answer some emails and hit the phones once again. We've got quite a few people on hold. 410 area code. It is Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, thanks for joining us tonight. What's your first question for us?
Good evening, Greg, and congratulations to you, Zach, and it's good to hear your voice after such a lengthy time.
Thank you, Reverend Keith. Good to hear your voice, too.
I'm glad that Brass Media is doing quite well. I want to say that Tony D versus Ilya Dragunov does not seem like the main event is standing and delivering. I'm in total agreement with your comments. Many people, however, are predicting that Tony D will shock the world and win the title. I don't see it. I think this will be a successful title defense for Ilya. I'm hoping that he will keep it at least a few more months, because when you think about it, once Melo loses to Trick, he'll come up to SmackDown. Braun is already on SmackDown as well, so you're losing two top-tier stars. So I don't think they want to push Ilya away from NXT just yet. And technically, in my opinion, I would prefer to see Ilya be the one to end Gunther's title reign, since he was the one to end his reign in NXT UK about 3 years ago, if you recall. And he's also beaten the then Walter on the independent scene. I'm in total agreement with what you were saying. Now, the Mello-Trick Williams match should rightfully be the main event. I'm surprised that they did not put the belt on either Mello or Trick prior to this, because it takes away from the D'Angelo Dragunov match by having this on the card, because people are mainly looking at this match and the Roxy Lira match as the two main matches on the show. So do you think that Trick and Mello will go on last, or do you think they will put the title and the title match itself on last?
I think Trick and Mello, you know, whenever we have these discussions, Zach, we always have to put the caveat in that it depends on the finishes, right? Because the finishes of these two matches can really dictate where they take place. And a match that you would think should be the main event, if it has an unsatisfying finish and, you know, they place it somewhere else on the card, it maybe does, it's more acceptable. And there are times where you will look at a match and say, wow, that's not the main event. And then once the card completes and you're sitting there reflecting back on it, you can say, okay, I can see why such and such a match was main event over such and such a match. So throwing that out there, if all things are equal and there's no funny business with the finishes or anything like that, I do think Trick and Mello should be the main event. And, you know, part of the reason I think it should have been for the title is because you wouldn't be having this debate if it was for the title. It absolutely 100% would be the main event, no questions asked. So to me, I think Trick and Mello should be the main event. There are not a lot of matches, Zach, that I say should be a main event over a title match, because I think that should be the main event of your pay-per-views more often than not. But I think this is one of those exceptions to the rule that we've seen over the years. Again, if all things are equal and if the finishes don't factor into the decision-making.
Yes, I agree. I can't add too much more to that. I just totally agree. You know, a few years back, I think it was 2018. So, I mean, I guess way back now. You know, I think it was TakeOver New Orleans, where the Gargano and Ciampa feud was the main event over, like, I think it was like an Aleister Black title defense or something like that. And, you know, it just made sense to do that then. And you know, this feud with Williams and Hayes, I don't think is necessarily on the level of Gargano and Ciampa, but it's close. It's pretty close. And so, yeah, I agree. If there's ever a time to do it, like, this is that time. And the finishes do matter. So, you know, if it's something where at the end of Stand and Deliver, Carmelo Hayes cheats to win and Tony D'Angelo wins the NXT title, and, you know, D'Angelo is doing that in the main event, I think we'll look back and go, ah, okay, I suppose that makes sense. But I don't think that's going to happen. So I think you're right, Greg. I think we're, you know, Melo and Trick are going to be the main event, and, you know, everything else will settle in around that.
Reverend Keith, your second question for us.
And I totally agree with you guys. Definitely Mello and Trick is the highlight of the show at large, the PLE. I definitely see them going on last, and I don't see the Don, you know, winning this belt. And also it's hard to – his alignment is kind of off to me, because, they position him as a quasi-babyface, but he comes off real heelish. And it's kind of hard to root for him, you know, because you don't know which way he's going to go. The alignment, it's just like how they do the BCC and AEW. One week they heal, the next week they face it. That's how I look at Tony D. I like Tony D. He's filled with charisma. But at the same token, you never know from week to week which way he's going to be patterning in the story. Is he, you know, because like when he took Ilya to the bridge where he had supposedly murdered the other guy that's in AEW now, you know, that was heelish, you know. So, and then he comes off last week as a babyface. So I think it's kind of hard for the fans to really get behind Tony D, you know, with that mafia gimmick, and he goes back and forth every week. So now, getting back to one other point you guys mentioned earlier about the Lara Roxanne Perez title defense, I would like to see Roxanne Perez, and I'm predicting as well that she will get that belt back. I think she has really come on strong as a heel, and I think there's more story with Roxanne as champion than Lara, like you guys already mentioned. Tatum Paxley's involvement in this whole storyline has taken away from Lara's title reign, in my opinion. Lara started off on fire. She, you know, Becky put her over huge, if you recall. That was an excellent match. But since then, you know, she's been defined down. And with Tatum, it's made it worse. You know, so with Roxanne getting that belt back, which she never lost, and now as a heel, there's so many women in that locker room who could challenge her. Because, I mean, to me, NXT has the largest women's locker room of all the companies right now, from TNA to AEW to WWE main roster. NXT has the largest women's locker room. Some of them are green, granted, but at the same token, it's more of them. And I think she would sell more as the heel women's champion, and she could, you know, bring out some good, like, for example, what's the girl's name? Fallon Henley could challenge her. You know, of course, Lara would get rematches. And then there are others in the back that could step up and challenge her as well. You know, like a babyface / legend who I wanted to, and I see her being with Tripp at the end of this show. So what are your thoughts on Roxanne's proposed challenges should she win the belt at Stand and Deliver?
Well, there's certainly no shortage of women in NXT. I totally agree with you there. To probably the detriment of NXT and the women on the roster, I don't think it's a good thing that they're introducing so many women haphazardly, it seems, and you know, it's just I don't think they've done a good job of differentiating a lot of the women from each other, and so, but you know, those aren't the women that are going to be challenging for the title. So I digress a little bit there. You know, back to the prediction of Roxanne Perez winning, I do think, Zach, that it's possible that this kind of launches, or NXT sees a Roxanne title win here, launching her heel character into a different stratosphere. She can brag about, you know, how she had never lost the title, and now she's got it back. It does set up a lot of different challenges for her, puts the focus on the heel character that she's working on. And really, you know, you expect if she wins the title, Tatum Paxley plays a role in Lyra Valkyria losing, so she can kind of save face there, and then that takes the Tatum Paxley story to a different chapter after Stand and Deliver. So you can totally see a world where Roxanne Perez absolutely wins the title here, I think.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. She really kind of needs to win this title, and I mean, I think there's pros and cons to that, because it really leaves a lot of the momentum and popularity that Lyra Valkyria has gotten has been as champion. I mean, she was obviously on television before that, but not to this level. Like, we've not, you know, seen her as like a top pushed woman in the women's division in NXT without that championship around her waist. Like, she's been there and she's been near it, but not to the extent that she's been. So it kind of, you know, Perez winning leaves her out there, and they've got the Tatum Paxley thing there to go with. But, you know, like we talked about at the start of the show, it's just not great. And, you know, I don't know how much you can really get out of it at this point. And so, okay, you do one match there, and now Valkyria is out there with nothing to do. And I really don't think you want that, but that I think is a less of an issue than Roxanne Perez kind of putting all this juice behind this heel turn and WWE putting a lot behind this heel turn and her getting her edge for none of it to matter and her not win. Like, I think that really would undercut not only the heel turn, but just Perez in general. Like, just to not win the title here, I think hurts her So I think she will. And I think David, Shawn Michaels knows that. And he's done the best he can to set up Valkyria for something after she's champion. And it'll be there. It'll just be a matter of how good can Paxley and her make that, which determines kind of what her trajectory is. But I guess the bottom line I'm trying to make is Perez, I think, is the most important woman on your roster coming out of this show. And so, you probably do have to sacrifice a couple others to get that where you need it to be. But she is a priority, and so I think she deserves that kind of attention.
And Reverend Keith, your final question for us tonight.
I wanted to discuss the North American title match. As far as I know, it should end up being a triple threat. Or I think they've announced that. Have they announced that yet? The triple threat with Obafemi, Dijak, and Briggs?
Not according to Wikipedia. That's where I got my stand and deliver lineup from. So Wikipedia could be a little behind, but
it's not been announced. I think they
announced.
It's not announced.
Yeah, okay. Okay. All right. Well, maybe I should keep my mouth shut. But anyway, I believe that Obafemi. Okay, I believe that Obafemi will retain, and typically the champions retain in triple threat matches. Now, regardless of what it ends up being, which it should be a triple threat match, but the guy, what's his name, Jensen. I see Jensen turning on Briggs. You know, he's tired of being compared with him, and the guy talked him up, and then, you know, the guy came and rescued him, and I think that's going to send him, send Jensen, that is, over the edge, and he's going to become jealous of Briggs and cost Briggs that fall in that match. Obafemi is a star, plain and simple. He has everything, the total package. He's huge. He can wrestle. He's big, but he moves like a cruiserweight. He has the charisma. He has the look. He has the charm. He would be great as a baby or a heel, either way you want to put him. Because if you notice, he's another one that can be a tweener like Tony D. Sometimes he comes out there and cuts heel promos, and the fans still cheer. The same with Tony D, like I mentioned earlier. But Obafemi is a star, and you can tell anytime they put the belt on this man, the North American belt, albeit the secondary belt, on this man after only six matches, they put the North American title on him. That lets you know that Shawn, Triple H, and all the others see a lot in him. And I think it's going to be a great match at Stand and Deliver, but I see Obafemi reigning supreme as a result of Jensen getting involved in this match. What are your thoughts on this match?
More specifically about Obafemi, because I want to touch on him first. Another guy who kind of came out of nowhere as far as the push, as Reverend Keith mentioned, he had six matches before he was awarded the title. So that shows you just the kind of the kind of trust that WWE had in him. And, he's done a nice job as a heel, but it's just been – it's been a whirlwind, and he's done a really nice job. You can see how raw he is still. You can see that rawness in him, but there's nothing that I've seen, Zach, that makes me think he can't get that ironed out eventually. I mean, he's still so young and so new as far as his in-ring work that I could totally see that happening. I think it's Dijak and Josh Briggs and Obafemi has all but been announced, I think, for Stand and Deliver. So, I could see Obafemi retaining here. I mean, he's a guy who I could see them kind of wanting to put the machine behind, so to speak, a little bit. What do you think about Obafemi so far?
I totally agree. I mean, I agree. He's got some things to kind of get through and learn, like in the ring. I really, that'll come. Like you said, he's only had a handful of matches. What stands out to me, and I think what stands out to, you know, WWE NXT brass is just there seems to me a comfortability with him just as like a star out there. Like I'm impressed by his promo work. Like it's not like super intricate stuff. It's not like he's not like Paul Heyman, but you know, there is just a kind of a confidence and like a guy
carries
that
himself like a
like,
star.
No, yeah, like he carries himself like a star. I also think he carries himself and talks like, you know, like that character would and should. Like it's very authentic to me. It's an authentic presentation, and I think people buy into it. I know he's a big guy, especially compared to like a lot of NXT talent, but I think he's a little miscast right now. You know, I think that there was an audience coming out of that the breakout tournament, and after he won the North American Championship, that just kind of wanted to see him run through other guys as a babyface. And he's a little bit of a tweener position here with Briggs and Dijak. So I think he's a little undefined, and I guess that's my point. That it doesn't seem that they've got like, all right, we're pushing him, yes, but we don't really know which way we're going with him yet. And I think that's okay. I think that's okay. It's early. It's early with him, and I think they've got a long way to go. But, man, you know, he's shown a lot, and, you know, he's one of the more exciting parts of the show when he's on television. So I think that there's a very, very bright future there, without question.
Absolutely. Reverend Keith, appreciate the phone call this week.
Thank you. Talk to you next week. Have a good week. God bless.
All right, thank you so much. Let's get to a couple emails. We've got Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee, who's on deck for us. But I want to run through a couple of these emails that we've got. The first is from Dustin. He says, "Hi, Wrestling Nighters. What do you think about Cody saying on SmackDown that he works on his promos before giving them? Jason from Australia seems to have had an issue with Cody showing how the sausage is made on the post-show with Wade. Or he had an issue with the idea of preparing a monologue at all. I'm not sure. Come on, a monologue can be practiced, should be practiced. Hard Times, Pipe Bomb, or Cody talking a story, all these need working on. Cody was more freestyle in AEW, and we saw how that went. You practice so it doesn't sound like an NXT recruit reciting. You practice so you get the flow and timing and maybe figure out how to handle or a what or a stumble to get great. Dusty might have spoken more to the mirror than Dustin. Do you want your wrestlers like your lawyers to have their speeches, their promos ready. That's different from a scripted dialogue, which are always terrible. Freestyle with structure is needed, but dudes going at each other in a work shoot dialogue also need to practice. Same as, again, politicians and lawyers work with their friends before they go into a debate or court. Or Conor McGregor, he didn't learn to talk the way he does from a script, but in a pub or locker room, but he definitely practiced it. I don't think there's any issue with a wrestler saying he practices promo or with him actually doing it. Your thoughts, should wrestlers prepare their promos carefully? Should they talk about it? Regards, Dustin." So I think we're kind of conflating two things here. I think people are reading into Cody saying he practices promo as kind of a shoot when it's really more as a work. Like if you were Cody Rhodes, the character, and you were going out and you knew you had a big interview that you had to give and you had a big moment that you were going to speak to the crowd in front of, you might, the character, practice it and say, you know, I want to be prepared. I want to be, you know, very intricate and very specific with my words. I think that's what he was talking about. It wasn't Cody Runnels saying, oh, you know, this is behind the scenes, but I practiced this promo, even though it's supposed to feel off the cuff. Like, I don't think that's what it was. So I think we're kind of conflating two things here. That is what Cody Rhodes was talking about. But, you know, I think there are promos that are supposed to feel off the cuff. You know, back in the day when, you know, you were watching Crockett programming or Mid-South or whatever, and guys would give promos at the desk after matches. You know, those are supposed to feel off the cuff, and they should not feel rehearsed. Whereas the kind of promos that you give now, I think, like, if I was Cody Rhodes the character, and I knew that I had a 15-minute promo that I was going to give on SmackDown, maybe I'd want to walk through before what I wanted to talk about, you know, so I didn't sound like a fool. So I think it really all depends on the setting and the purpose of the promo. And so I didn't really have a problem with what Cody said. I guess I didn't read into it the same way others did. What did you take from that?
I'm surprised. I took it your way. to be honest. I was surprised at some of the backlash, honestly, because I read it exactly like you read, that this is Cody the character, and he's saying that, hey, this is a big moment for me. Head of WrestleMania, one on one with the champ in the ring, and like so. Yeah, I'm gonna run through a couple things that I'm gonna say, and I'm gonna think about what I'm gonna say and what I'm gonna do, and I think that totally makes sense for a wrestling character. Like, you know, you don't have. I just think, like, yeah, to the point about a lawyer, you know, that's not off the cuff. You know, yeah, you don't want it to sound like you're reading when you're delivering, like, a closing argument or something like that. But you rest assured, like, you're hoping that your attorney is practiced before they get in there. And I think the same kind of holds true here. So I totally didn't have a problem with that. And I also think that, like, you know, if we find out on a podcast in 20 years that wasn't the point, and it was an off-the-cuff comment that Cody made about, you know, how the sausage is made and how he practices promos. You know, I don't think it's a problem for wrestlers to practice their promos, like, you know, not from, you know, taking character out of it, just real-life pro wrestler. You know, I don't think – you don't get extra points for the, you know, for not rehearsing it. As long as it doesn't come across as rehearsed and overly scripted and overly prepared, you know – nobody would ever know. Nobody should ever know. And so I don't knock him for that. I do think that if it's not part of the character, you know, you want to just leave it off TV. Like, you don't want people debating this point, I guess. And I didn't think that they would, but you definitely don't want people debating, like, the meta of do wrestlers practice their promos or not. So, you know, having my eyes open a bit here to some of the criticism is interesting. I just took it like you did, Greg, where it's like, this is his character. And of course, this is character is going to work on that and going to practice that and massage that. So, you know, I think it's much ado about nothing, but I guess, maybe not.
Yeah. It should be much ado about nothing. But yeah, I think there were some criticisms. There were a lot of criticisms that I've seen, and maybe we'll get to it, of that segment on SmackDown, and so maybe this kind of was dug out of that, you know, but I don't know.
Yeah.
The another email we got from John, he said, hi, Greg and Zach, hope you're both doing well. So he's got a what would you do scenario question for us. He says he's going to give you a scenario, and Zach, you have to pick what you would do in this scenario.
Okay.
So he also noticed that when he gives these scenarios that I tend to choose the most rational choices. Yes, I'm no fun, you know, but
what a swear. What?
I know it totally fits who I am. So I'm not trying to be like PC or anything like that. It is absolutely who I am. So he says, hypothetical scenario, you're Becky Lynch. It's 48 hours before WrestleMania, and you've just been told that you're set to win the championship from Rhea Ripley in clean fashion. Sounds great, right? However, there are other factors to consider about whether it's good news for you or not. The crowd responses to you in every city have been relatively tepid, and a tiny fraction of the monstrous reactions Rhea, Mommy Ripley, has been constantly receiving. In addition, you hear some unnamed lower-tier woman wrestler whispering backstage about whether you might get booed or outright rejected by fans if you defeat Ripley. Maybe not Roman Reigns-level heat, but who knows? On top of this, Triple H has told you directly that you will be a transitional champion only, with the current plans being for Nia Jax to win the title from you in your first title defense at the next PLE and for her to hold it until next year's WrestleMania, at which point Liv Morgan is penciled in to dethrone Nia. Paul Triple H Levesque also said that he thinks Rhea Ripley will be fine after losing and directly compares her to Steve Austin in that she doesn't need the championships to be over. Finally, there's more whispers going around that this call for you to be a transitional champion is largely because you haven't signed a new contract yet, but this hasn't been confirmed by anyone in power. There have also been reports with behind-the-scenes insight about future plans for you, which includes you working with the likes of Maxxine Dupree and Katana Chance and Caden Carter post-WrestleMania. You may see this in a positive light and help the younger talent, or feel disrespected, or maybe you don't care either way. So, what would you do? A, you might say, you were saying I end Rhea's reign and win the championship? I love it. That's all you need to hear. Now you're focused solely on the match. B, You meet Triple H and passionately but respectfully try to change his mind because you don't want to risk being booed by the majority of the fans who love Ripley and want her to continue. Plus, you support Rhea and don't want to stop her momentum. C, you try to make a strong case to Triple H to give you a longer title reign post to WrestleMania. D, you panic and try to turn heel on social media in order to save face in case of fan backlash at WrestleMania, not too dissimilar to Hogan Rock at WrestleMania, which was totally unexpected by WWE. E, you don't really care strongly either way. You trust the creative team's plans. You just want the best match possible with Rhea and will be a professional and go home to your kid and live your best life. F, you walk out because you feel disrespected by WWE, mainly due to your own paranoia and anxiety about possibly moving down the card. John says he would personally do E. He says, keep up the great work. So I think there's a couple at play here for me. I think A, where I just love the idea of ending Rhea's reign and focus solely on the match and whatever will be will be. C, if I'm really passionate about it, I might make a case to Triple H to give me a longer reign post-WrestleMania. Depends on my relationship with Triple H, how comfortable I am doing that. And then, of course, E, which is, you know, I, as Becky Lynch, have enough money, have enough fame, have enough recognition. I'm going to make a ton in book sales. This stuff doesn't bother me. Like, I've been in this business long enough to know, you know, whatever happens, happens. And if I get booed against Rhea Ripley, if I have a one-month title reign, if I'm saddled with Katana Chance and Caden Carter, again, so be it. Like, I'll make the best of it. So that would be my combination of you know, me personally, if I were Becky Lynch, how I would react. Zach, are you going to go and walk out, storm out, and maybe go to Stardom or AEW or something?
You know, no, I would think, you know, what I would do is a firm A. I think I'd be a firm A. I think, you know, this is 48 hours out from WrestleMania. And the way I would look at it, you know, obviously not being in the wrestling business, but I would look at it as, okay, you know, there's 48 hours, it's WrestleMania weekend. We've got, like, there's no time to change any plans. So, yes, we're going to do this. We're going to make the best of it. We're going to have the best match possible. I'm going to win the title. Hey, you know, no one's ever going to, like, you know, it's hard to say no to that.
Winning the title at WrestleMania. Winning the title at WrestleMania is hard to say no to. Like, that's a moment. I'm sorry. Like, that's a moment that I don't think I would pass up.
Exactly. Like, I think I've taken that. And then, you know, okay, once, you know, the dust settles on that and it's, you know, Monday at noon and you're sitting at the building at Raw, then it's like, okay, let's figure out what's going to happen here. And I think you fight the battle after the fact, not before the fact. So I'm definitely choosing A. I'm, like, pretty convinced that that'd be me. I'd kind of bask in that glory and then as champion try to go to battle for what I thought was the best way to book the situation after that.
Yeah. Right. And again, I think that's an important point, too, that I kind of maybe forgot about is 48 hours from WrestleMania.
Yeah.
You know, everybody is under enough stress at that point that that's not the time to rock the boat. You've got to pick your battles,
right,
and you've got to know when to pick your battles, not only what battles to pick, but when to pick them. That's just as important a lot of times. So that's an important factor to consider as well. Let's go. Let's bring on Sean. He's been waiting a while. Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee, is on. Sean, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, first, Greg, I would have said you could have just did whatever you wanted. Greg, it's your show, man. It's your show. You've made this show what it is. You do whatever you need to do. No, I'm glad to be on with you guys. I appreciate it. I will say, our teams did a lot of stuff in free agency and the NFL. Holy crap. Was that not a crazy NFL free agency or what? I've seen some crazy ones, but that was up there. What'd you guys think about that real fast? I wanted to hear your thoughts on that real quick. That was crazy. It was wild.
My head is still spinning. Like, I can't. It's going to take a long time for me to process where everybody went because I just feel like there was, you know, there's always movement every year, but this year feels, as you said, even crazier than usual. You know, as a Jaguars fan, the big thing that stands out to me is losing Calvin Ridley. And, you know, why did we lose Calvin Ridley? Well, if you believe some people, it's that the Jaguars didn't start negotiating with Josh Allen quickly enough and had to franchise tag him, rather than the alternative, which was to come to an agreement with Allen and then franchise tag Calvin Ridley, which is a big discussion point amongst the fan base and a lost opportunity that a lot of fans see at this point. But, Zach, tell us about the Bears.
Well, it's exciting to be a Bears fan. It's not usually, so this is cool. I liked Justin Fields. I thought he was I think in any other year, if we had just the ninth pick, he probably would still be the quarterback of our team. But Caleb Williams seems like the smart choice, and he seems like he could be a really good player. So, I'm on board, and, let's just hope it's not J.J. McCarthy at number one.
I don't get the J.J. McCarthy hype. I just don't get it. I'm sorry.
Either. I really don't either.
No.
I'm scared, though, because it's the Bears, guys. Like, weirder things have happened than that.
Nah, it's gonna be Williams. Not that I think Williams is a 100% safe prospect. I think there is some risk there. With Caleb Williams. I don't think it's like Trevor Lawrence coming out or anybody like that who was, pretty much a slam dunk that he was going to be a really solid number one pick. So that it does carry some risk, but, it's the Bears. It wouldn't be the Bears if there wasn't some risk involved.
Exactly.
Yeah. So with my Packers, I'll say first, Caleb Williams, the only thing I worry about him is his personal stuff. I think he's going to be a fantastic player. I just worry about the personal things, the attitude, the am I going to be built-in team? Am I going to really want to play 100% for this team? That's the only issue I have with him, so I will say that up front. That's my only worry with him. Packers, I don't know why you – I know Aaron Jones is a little bit older. Don't let him go. Josh Jacobs wasn't the guy. I'm sorry. That's my 2 cents on that. I would throw that out there really fast. But we'll see where the Packers go. Did some good stuff. Go back to wrestling. I was just going to bring up two things. The first was, I hadn't heard anybody talk about, and I didn't get to watch the, I actually haven't heard Wade's SmackDown post show yet, so I'm going to listen to that tomorrow, but so they might have brought it up a little bit since it was on there. But talking about Jade, so with Jade, I like the slow burn that they've done with her. Like, they haven't brought her out too much. They're not, like, overusing her in any way, really early, which has been really good. Initially, I thought, well, maybe they'll, try to get her on WrestleMania, which I think they still can, but obviously it doesn't look like there's going to be any kind of match, which is probably, the more I think about it, the more it's probably better just do some character work with her and build her to something, at a pay-per-view, obviously, or a PLE coming up later on or WrestleMania next year. So I wanted to hear what you thought about her just exclusively going on SmackDown and being a SmackDown star. And where you think they might go with her starting out, because they haven't really said anything going to it yet or where they might go. So I was curious what you guys thought about Jade, what they've done with her so far, and what you think is up next year coming up in the next few months, maybe Raw after Mania or SmackDown after Mania. Obviously, it can't be Raw because she's on SmackDown. But SmackDown after Mania, do you think that's where they're going with her? What do you think they're going to do?
I do think it's sort of the same argument we raised with Rey and Dominic, right, which was – this is too big of a deal to just throw in there last minute in terms of her having a match at WrestleMania. If you want Jade Cargill to be special, which based on the presentation so far, WWE does want her to be special, you don't throw her on a WrestleMania match with no story 2 weeks out just to put her on WrestleMania. The one thing that I talked about, I think it was last week, in regards to a role for Jade Cargill is – potentially winning a women's battle royal if you do that. They haven't always done that, but if they do a women's battle royal prior to WrestleMania, either on the SmackDown before or on the WrestleMania pre-show, I think that would be a great opportunity to have Jade Cargill go over and start to build some momentum for the post-WrestleMania season, where she's likely to be a major player. So certainly I wouldn't put her on the WrestleMania card in a match of any kind, but if you can showcase her strengths by winning a battle royal beforehand, I think that's the way you go. Otherwise, I would hold her off until, you know, maybe advertise her in-ring debut as a singles. You know, she wrestled at the Royal Rumble, but advertise her in-ring debut as a singles wrestler on SmackDown for the SmackDown after WrestleMania. Make that feel special. Zach, what do you think Jade Cargill's role WrestleMania weekend should be, if any?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's either going to be nothing or the Battle Royal, either on SmackDown or on you know, the pre-show, or I guess there's a chance it could be on WrestleMania. I doubt it, but that's what I would do at this point. I mean, they've taken a lot of time to make sure that she's seen a certain way, and so just like the Rey thing, I think you're exactly right. Like, you just don't want to shoehorn that match in. I think you want that first singles match to matter. I think you want it to be a big deal. And, you know, on WrestleMania, like, anything with like a 2-week build here is just going to be background noise to what else is going on. So like, if you want to add in a, you know, a low card match or something for the women's tag titles, okay, like that, fine. You can do that with a couple weeks notice. But based on how they presented Jade so far, you know, I think it needs to be bigger than that. And so in a strange way, I think that means not being in the background at WrestleMania. So if there's a spot for her in the Battle Royal, I would take it and I'd go all the way with her there. But if not, you know, she, you know, has got a lot of years ahead of her headlining WrestleManias and having big WrestleMania matches. And I think maintaining her unique kind of presentation as this very special star is more important than just getting her on the card.
Mm-hmm. Sean, back to you for your next question for us.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about AEW because I think it's been interesting what they've been doing on Dynamite here the last few weeks, with, you know, kind of with the quote-unquote freshening up of the show. There's still a lot of things I'm not liking as much, and one of them, in a little bit of a factor, is Mercedes. Like, Mercedes is coming out as a big star. Like, that part is fine. Like, she's coming out, she's a big star. I love Mercedes. I mean, who doesn't? You know, I thought her promo this last week was okay. I mean, I thought it was fine. I am kind of with, if anybody's listening to Todd Martin on the fit, I'm already kind of getting, not there yet, but I'm getting close to, like, the CEO getting overdone already. I don't really like that part of what she's doing now. I'm not a fan. I hope they don't go too far into that. I'm like, you know, he said it's a baby face. It feels weird, and it really does. So that was a whole – I want to hear what you thought about that. But also, just with the stuff with her and Willow, I know that, again, they have the storyline built in with her and Willow from what happened a year ago, and they're kind of going into that a little bit. I just think with the way the Willow and Statlander and Stokely story has just been all over the place, just hasn't done it for me at all. And I just think putting Mercedes in the middle of that – when you're trying to portray her as a big star, even though Willow is a star in the, you know, or could be in the future, I think she's on the right track. But as far as Mercedes, like with her right now, I think if you're wanting to make her feel big, like she should be, to me, going for the main title. And it hurts because what Tony's done with the main title has just felt kind of weird and hasn't been as good for me either. So I just want to hear what you think they've done with Mercedes and like what trajectory you think she's on, and do you like the CEO part of it? Because I haven't really liked that so far. And Zach, I want to say, man, like I said, I've, you know, told you many times, I'm a proud Brass Ring Media member. As much as I love the Torch, I love Brass Ring just as much. I love what you and Tyler are doing, man. I just, you know, keep doing what you're doing. I'm always going to be with you guys for sure. Greg, I appreciate you, man. And thank you for taking my call, as always.
Thank you.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you.
You know, I think there was always going to be criticism of AEW if they didn't immediately put Mercedes into the women's title picture, just because there's the argument, and you know, people disagree on whether or not this should be the case, but if you are the biggest star, as Mercedes certainly has an argument to be in the women's division, you should be champion, or at least in the title picture. So for her to come in involved in this lower card kind of comedy storyline that Willow and Chris Statlander and Stokely Hathaway are involved in could be jarring to some people. I think the CEO character could work as a babyface, but I think it definitely needs a lot more fleshing out. It definitely needs a lot more explanation beyond, hey, her name was Banks once. Now it's Monet. Get it? You know, that's kind of what seems like to be like what it is now. And so I do think it needs to be fleshed out a lot more beyond that. But, you know, people know her. She's a star. And I think in the long run, that's going to help the division more than hurt it. But what have been your thoughts on her character and how she's integrated herself into AEW storyline so far?
So let's put it this way. I think that there's like a middle choice. Like there, like if you guys, if like Sean kind of gave choice A and choice B, you know, as far as like which ways you can go with Mercedes Moné, choice A being, well, she's got to win the title right away, and choice B being, well, this is like what she's doing right now. To me, there's definitely a middle ground. I don't know that you could like realistically debut Mercedes Moné and in the first, you know, 2 weeks make her the champion. Like that to me would be pretty jarring. I think that there's an argument for it in certain instances, because obviously right out of the gate, you know, that person's the biggest star and therefore she's got the championship. But I do think that's jarring too. But for me, it's like, it's door number three, which is, I think you can have her come in the way that she has, CEO gimmick and all, presentation and all, because I think that's been on point. I think she's really come across as a big star. She's looked the part. She's acted like the part. Yeah. You know, I mean, news that has come out as far as what she's getting paid, you know, that goes right along with the gimmick and, you know, is really synonymous in that way with being a top star. So all that stuff is there. I just would have stepped up the game as far as who this non-title opponent is. Like, because there's Willow Nightingale and there's Chris Statlander, and then there's, you know, there's like Britt Baker level talent. There's Hikaru Shida level talent. There's just other like top, like other upper tier women in the women's division that I think she can, you know, have her first feud with, that gets over the idea better that she's a big star, but not putting her in the title picture right away. Like it's something that can launch her directly into that. Like if Britt Baker were in the picture, you could do that feud, get a few months out of it, maybe get a couple of pay-per-views out of it. And then you move on to the title, to a title match. You know, I think that there's like another level of talent in the women's division that just has kind of got skipped over. It's like, okay, you're not going to necessarily go to Toni Storm right away, but you know, you don't need to go with Chris Statlander either. And you don't need to put her in the, you know, crossing paths with Julia Hart as the TBS champion. Like I don't think you want that. So there's just some wires crossing there for me. But nothing like that has totally damaged her run yet. Certainly not. Like, I think if they do this Willow thing, okay, fine. Like, is there better women for her to work with out of the gate? Yes, but it's not gonna hurt her. I think the issue that I have and what I'm watching is, like, what happens after this initial kind of feud? Like, if this is, you know, like Saraya, in terms of she comes back, she has a big match, and then she really does, like, fade into the background, that's a problem. But if this is, like, just step one, get her involved, get her on TV, you know, and then, you know, kind of ramp things up and then do, you know, do Toni Storm, do Deonna Purrazzo. You can, obviously, as I said, Britt Baker, maybe Jamie Hayter's coming back. Like, then I think you're okay. I think you're fine as long as this, like, lower level stuff doesn't linger for too long, because there are some key matches that she can have and some key, you know, longer term feuds that she can have. And you just got to get to those. Like, there's nothing to wait for here. Like, go for them. Do it and do it soon. And as long as that's what comes next, I think everything with her will be fine.
In defense of pairing her off with Willow right away, if you were to look at this from professional wrestling as, you know, simulated combat or, you know, something like that, if you were Sasha Banks and you were coming into AEW where the person who took your title is, wouldn't that be your first instinct is to go after her?
Yeah.
for taking the title? And I mean, So from that perspective, it does make sense if you were to, you know, portray this as real fighters and real from that point of view, I think. So that's a defense of it a little bit. 240, you are on deck, but I want to get into some of these WrestleMania matches. We can kind of rapid fire through these here, Zach, because we've got a couple emails to get to as well. LA Knight versus AJ Styles. They took things up a notch at SmackDown when LA Knight came out to AJ Styles' house and attacked him. There's always a match that feels like this every year, where it's just two guys who they are too big to be left off the WrestleMania card, but really don't have anything substantial to do. And WWE just kind of throws them together in a match and tries their darndest to heat it up beforehand. And it always just comes across as, yeah, it's a nice match and it's good that these guys got a WrestleMania payday, but eh. And that's kind of how I feel about LA Knight, AJ Styles.
Yeah. I mean, I do too. I'm glad they gave it some juice this week. I'm glad they are going through the motions of trying to make it into something more than what you just described. But I think ultimately, like, that's very much what it is, you know. I will say, again, I'm glad they gave it what they gave it. I'm glad they also just aren't shoehorning these two guys into, like, the Randy Orton, Kevin Owens, Logan Paul match. Because there was an era in WWE at WrestleMania where it would be like, oh, you know, man, we really want LA Knight and AJ Styles to be on the card. Let's just load up this other match. It's a fatal five-way now. And it's just like, I'm glad that it's a singles match. And yeah, it's kind of a nothing match, but I think it's, you know, it's better than, you know, watering down your entire card by trying to pigeonhole it somewhere where it doesn't belong. So, hey, you know, this is going to be a low card match. It's going to be, you know, maybe second or third on, I would guess, like, on one of the nights. And so, you know, if with that being the case, I think they're doing right by it, and I think that's okay.
Well, speaking of Logan Paul versus Randy Orton versus Kevin Owens for the U.S. title, you know, there were some options for Logan Paul here that were intriguing. I had thought even, you know, back months ago, maybe a match against Gunther when we were looking for opponents for Gunther for the IC title would be interesting. There were some other matches. This almost kind of feels like a disappointment for Logan Paul, not because he's not worthy of Kevin Owens or Randy Orton or vice versa, but more so that we've so become accustomed to Logan Paul having these standout matches that this may not be one that features his strengths, given the ground and pound nature of Randy Orton and Kevin Owens at this point of their career. So I guess it's a disappointment from that point of view, but I do think the interactions between Paul and Orton and Paul and KO, like this past week on SmackDown, have made for entertaining television. So it's been worth it from that perspective.
Yep, I agree. I think, you know, yeah, you're not going to see, like, the high-flying Logan Paul. My guess is you get a memorable RKO in here at some point. And that's kind of like the big social media highlight that Logan Paul likes to get out of his matches. But, you know, again, to your point, like, what they've done on television has been strong. It's been entertaining. I think it's worked for the three of them. You know, Kevin Owens, I think he's tough in this situation because I think, like, personally, I think a singles match between Logan Paul and Randy Orton would have been kind of more of a draw, like, for that title and for Logan Paul, like, just to make it, like, because Randy Orton is a big legacy star, and, you know, but they just didn't finish the business with Logan Paul and Kevin Owens either, so they kind of had to go this route because they left that lingering. So again, this works for what it is. I think they're, you know, it's going to be a fun little match, and it's going to be a different kind of showcase for Logan Paul, and I think you know what you're going to get out of Orton and Kevin Owens.
We've got Io Sky versus Bayley for the women's championship over on SmackDown. I've liked how they've handled the Bayley babyface turn. I like that she didn't kind of back into it with a loss. I like that she outsmarted her partners at one point, you know, when she turned on them, and she's been prepared to fight them. The one thing that I think I would have changed is Dakota Kai. I would have liked to have seen Dakota Kai stick with Bayley. And I get wanting to stack the deck against Bayley, and maybe that's part of her character arc is not having friends. We saw Bianca Belair come out and chastise Naomi for sympathizing with Bayley for the attack, saying, you know, you haven't been here when Bayley's been just absolutely grinding everybody's gears backstage here over the last several years. And so, you know, maybe that's kind of the point. It goes back to the Jey Uso on Raw thing. It's very similar to how he was handled when he moved to Raw and was a babyface, and all those who had had run-ins with the Bloodline were very skeptical of that, and some of them still remain skeptical. So, you know, there's that part to it, but I would have liked to have seen Dakota Kai, and maybe she's on the other side, she can cut promos, maybe that's just as simple as that. But I do think having someone on Bailey's side and having her portrayed as at least having one friend might be helpful in this battle.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, and I think Dakota Kai, I don't know, she's just kind of like the odd woman out in the whole group anyway. And so I think it would have made sense for her to kind of side with Bailey here, but I also think they are going for like a Bailey overcomes everything on her own type approach too, as far as how to complete her babyface turn, like fully. Nah, I mean, it's already done, but I mean, like, to really put, you know, icing on the cake, like win the title, she gets to vanquish all of her, like, you know, her heel former faction mates. So, I mean, I get what you're saying. I think that's the story. The Bailey turn, I think, has been really effective too. I'm with you on that. I agree. You know, it wasn't like overnight. It wasn't like, it didn't feel like a big swerve. Like, it felt like it took time. It felt like it, you know, that I think Bailey really played it well. And I think Damage Control as a faction have played it well back in terms of like how they play off each other, how they sell for one another. I think, you know, even losing Bailey, the Damage Control faction still, you know, has a cachet and still has like a legitimacy and credibility to them, which works. And so, you know, my guess is that Bailey gets the title here, and, you know, you kind of go on this new journey with Bailey as the champion. And I think that's probably the good way to go. And I think, you know, they got a lot out of Io Sky's title reign if they can pull this off right. So I think there's a lot of good that has happened here. Greg, do you think they'll pull out like the old Bailey entrance for WrestleMania, like Bailey buddies and the song? Like, do you think do you think Triple H is going back there like, no, look, I handed this to Vince McMahon on a silver platter and he messed it up. We're going back and we're gonna do this right.
I think a lot of people would find that cool. I just don't think it would fit her character because, you know, that was a very specific time and place. And so, you know, I think even though she's a baby face, it's definitely not the same baby face that she was. And so I do think there would be that problem with it, as cool as it would be. And I mean, it would pop people and everything like that. So I do think in sort of contrast to the argument I was making about Dakota Kai is having her a heel, if you're a fan of Dakota Kai and feel she's been underutilized, she's been really the leader of this group since she's turned back heel. So it's giving her a more prominent role too than I think she would have if she was just kind of Bailey's babyface sidekick.
Yeah, and a future opponent for her coming out of Wrestle. If Bailey's going to win the title, right, at WrestleMania, like, you've got Dakota Kai there too. Yeah.
Yep. Two more matches we'll talk about here. One is Seth Rollins versus Drew McIntyre for the world title. There's concern that this match is taking a backseat in terms of hype to Seth Rollins' other match, which we'll talk about in just a second, but Drew McIntyre has done most of the heavy lifting here, and boy, has he been a revelation. I mean, he is just reveling in this heel character and doing it so well, and now he's taking to social media and being like, you know, he's the meme king now on social media with his with his responses. So it's been, I mean, Would I have rather seen Seth Rollins versus CM Punk? Yeah, probably, and I think the build would be equally good. But Drew McIntyre, to his credit, has taken the ball and run with it here. And, you know, it does kind of feel like if you're discussing Seth Rollins leading up to WrestleMania, chances are you're discussing him in the tag match and not in this match. So, and that was always the risk. I think, you know, WWE had to have been discussions creatively in terms of the risk of this match seeming less than, because this is, even though it's for the world title, the other one is The Rock and the other one is Roman Reigns and the other one is Cody Rhodes. And they're all bigger stars than Drew McIntyre at this point. So how do you see WWE having balanced so far this match with Seth Rollins' other match? Could they have done a better job, or does this kind of feel like the best you could have done?
I think they've done a pretty good job given the circumstances. So I think this is like on the high end of how of how they could have done this. Because look, I mean, Seth's in this thing with The Rock and with Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns. I mean, and that should be, like, you know, I mean, in a lot of ways, that should be a priority for him. I mean, it's a big time match. But the good thing is about this is Drew's been doing such a great job. And I think what really kind of emphasizes my point here that this has been effectively built is that Drew has tied his world title match against Seth Rollins into the tag match and the build and hype for that. Like, he's connecting the dots that, like, hey, Seth, you're not paying attention and it's going to impact your ability to wrestle me in this match. Like, he's calling that out. So it's not like they have two completely different storylines going here. It's like they're very much connected to one another. And I think that was a smart call to make, because now you talk about Seth Rollins, you talk about him in the tag match, but you also bring it, you know, Drew has forced you to pay attention to that match and that tag team match, but through the lens of Seth defending the world title the next night. And so I think that's been really effective. And to me, if they're smart, you know, I'd have that the tag match impact the finish of this one, not because like somebody from the bloodline, you know, interferes or anything like that, but, you know, Seth, you know, burns it at both ends. You know, he goes all out night one for whatever reason and isn't all there for night two and Drew wins. Like, and I think that's a nice way to kind of integrate these two stories together. So I think they really would have had a hard time if you were trying to make them two completely separate things. They didn't do that. It was the right call. And I think people are anticipating this match on night two. So, you know, thumbs up for me.
And I do think they've done a nice job. And this is sort of the benefit of having two shows, is they've, for the most part, the hype for the tag match has been on SmackDown. As we saw this Friday,
right,
Seth Rollins makes an appearance to sort of hype that tag match. And then the title match has been confined to Raw. Most of that hype, and yes, they've tied the two together, but most of the hype has been on Raw for that. So, you know, it's WrestleMania season. The idea of a brand split or whatever like that kind of softens a little bit, as I think was necessary in this case. But that's been another beneficiary of WWE's ability to handle both of these stories at once, is they figured out, okay, let's focus our attention on the tag match on SmackDown, and let's focus on the world title match and the hype on Raw. And I think that's made things a little cleaner in terms of the hype.
Yeah, well said.
And then, of course, the tag match. The Bloodline versus Cody and Seth. If Cody and Seth win, there will be no Bloodline ringside for Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns. If the Bloodline wins, it will be Bloodline rules for night two of Cody versus Roman. So a lot of speculation about The Rock here. And does he turn? Does he not? Does he turn the next night? Does he not? There's this feeling that we're going to get The Rock versus Roman Reigns. So you would think a turn needs to happen at some point WrestleMania weekend. What's your prediction, or what do you feel, what does your gut say about The Rock and what his role is this WrestleMania WrestleMania weekend vis-a-vis his relationship with Roman Reigns?
Yeah, boy. I mean, yeah, that's going to be such an interesting topic going forward. I think that The Rock, I guess I don't think The Rock wants to like be this kind of heel character like for the rest of his tenure in WWE, you know, or like whatever this run is going to be. And the reason I say that is because I just don't know that he has like the right instincts all the time. Like I thought that the Rock concert a couple of weeks ago was entertaining for sure. No question. And fun to watch. And if you're in the building, you'd probably, you know, that's probably going to be something you talk about for a while. But in terms of like just the match itself that he was building towards, it was really out of touch. Like he was getting cheered by the fans and he was like orchestrating those cheers on his own. And he was, you know, so I just don't know how long like a truly like heel Rock character can last, or how long people will be willing to kind of play along with what he's doing. Like, I think that it's not something that can sustain for a long period of time, just because The Rock is so charismatic and he is such a big star. And, you know, frankly, he wants to do certain things. And with that Roman Reigns match looming on the horizon, to me, you know, you do have him kind of be the turncoat in that match. You are able to kind of put a bow on The Rock's involvement in this Cody thing. He can, you know, Cody and Seth and him can kind of end night one on a high note, and the bloodline is completely out of the picture for the next night, including The Rock. So you kind of just get that out of the way and done, and then you can just take care of business at hand on Sunday with Cody and Roman. I think if you do it the other way and have Rock and Roman win, it's like, why would Rock like turn on Roman the next night? Or why would, you know, what would be the reason for a turn at all, like after they go ahead and win that tag team match together? So I just think that that's cleaner. I think it's cleaner. I think it's cleaner for The Rock. I think it's cleaner for Cody. And then, you know, in terms of like the business of what's next, I mean, you have a clear path now to a Rock versus Roman Reigns match at any point that you want to do it, or that The Rock can do it, whether that's at SummerSlam or Saudi Arabia, I suppose, or WrestleMania next year. Like, you've got the story right there. So that's how I would be looking to book this thing, as opposed to The Rock getting involved and like helping Cody win on Sunday or something to that effect. Like, could you do it that way? Yes. But I just don't think that's very clean for Cody either. So this, to me, checks a lot of boxes, and I think that's what I would do.
Well, we will preview the other half of the WrestleMania card next weekend here on Wrestling Night in America. Let's go back to the phones here. Our final call of the evening, the 240 area code, 240. You're on Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Steve from Bowie, Maryland, completing the State of Maryland hat trick with Ryan and Reverend Keith.
Yes. We have a tremendous, tremendous listenership in Maryland. Maryland loves Wrestling Night in America. I don't know what it is, but
yeah,
they love us.
Yeah. Ryan's out in the western part, Keith's in Baltimore, and I'm in the D.C. suburbs. But anyhow, real quick, I've got one little public service announcement for some of the listeners out there. I'm sure they've been reminded by now, but people need to be reminded that Google is shutting down its podcast app next Tuesday, and they're trying to get everybody to go over to YouTube Music, so you won't be able to get your podcast through Google in next week.
All right. Let us adjust our listening accordingly.
Okay. But my first question then is coming up, what's happening this weekend and why we're not seeing The Rock on three consecutive WWE programming. And Greg, I'm sure you're well aware of this. He's got to put on the hype hat and be UFL owner and do all the promotional media hits for kickoff weekend. My question is, do you think that some people might get confused by seeing, you know, Mr. Positive Dwayne Johnson – on their TV when they're expecting and getting him confused with, you know, evil heel bloodline Rock. You know, the man and the character. People get that confused sometimes. Do you think they're pressing their luck or risking that?
I would like to think highly enough of wrestling fans to think that one should not get confused between one's persona and one's wrestling character. I hope in the year of our Lord 2024, we don't have to worry about that sort of thing. But I know that there are people who are, the It's Still Real to Me, Damn It crowd, who may be shocked, I tell you, to see The Rock, if he does any media this week, hyping the UFL, to be surprised at him not being more of a heel. I don't think it's ideal, Zach, if you're The Rock, to do these things, because I think it also, like, ideally, if you're The Rock, you can kind of use your WWE platform to hype the UFL, but as a heel, you can't do that. That tool has been taken out of your toolbox. But that's really the only thing that I would say. I don't think it's going to cause any kind of real issues.
I don't either. I don't either. I really don't. I mean, yeah, I think The Rock, I mean, will likely be out there. I mean, Greg, you probably have a better sense of that. And by the way, I'm pumped to follow your UFL coverage, just like I did the XFL coverage last year. So big props to you on that.
Thank you.
But I'm with you. I mean, I think, look, like you have to, I mean, look, The Rock's not going to not promote this because of the match at WrestleMania. The timing isn't ideal, but also maybe it is. Like if you're Rock and you're like, well, you know, I want to be out there while I'm out there for WWE.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just don't think it's going to be an issue. And even if how much will the Rock be doing? Like, I don't know what he's going to be asked to do, but I just don't think it's going to be like anything super long form or anything like that. So I don't think there's an issue here.
Yeah, and you know, with the XFL last year, he was more of the focus, and him and Danny Garcia as co-owners, that was the real PR for the XFL was, hey, here's The Rock and Danny Garcia, they're co-owners, and oh, by the way, there's also some football that's being played. Whereas now I think the focus is less on The Rock and Danny Garcia. They sort of pulled back on that. Yes, The Rock has been out there making announcements, you know, on ESPN, College Football Game Day, and NFL on Fox and things like that at the outset. But the media rounds lately have been Moose Johnston, you know, Dallas Cowboy legend, who's a big part of the league, a VP with the league. Danny Garcia has done a little bit, but even they've pulled back on her. You know, she was absolutely front and center to where it really bothered people last year with the XFL as to how much it was about, you know, her role with the league rather than the players and the focus on that. So I think, you know, the advertising is different from the XFL last year, and they're pushing different things, which could decrease the Rock. So, I mean, you never want to completely take Rock out of the picture because, like him or not, he's got a – I think they said on SmackDown, you know, the most followed man on social media in the United States. Like, if you're the UFL and your survival depends on viewership, you're going to want someone like that talking about you, whether it's in radio interviews or tweeting about it or whatever like that. So, but I do think they pulled back a little bit on him being the focus of the PR push that the league has gotten. So, Steve, back to you for your, if you have anything else for us tonight.
Yeah, just two quick football facts. You were talking about your teams and free agency. Here in D.C., we're just glad we have grown-ups running the show now.
I'm sure.
And
yeah,
in terms of the UFL, remember, D.C. is the home of the world of football's best beer snake.
Yeah. And, you know, hey, there are still people who say even though St. Louis draws a bigger crowd, D.C. has the better fans. So there are those people out there as well. So I say, hey, D.C., prove it this year. Prove it this year. Steve, thank you for the call this week.
And one final
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Should we be concerned at all that the WWE might try and do something screwy given, think about it, next week's Monday Night Raw, the go-home Monday Night Raw for Mania, is on April Fool's Day.
Oh, boy.
No.
Well,
no,
I had not thought of that, although, Zach, I can't really think of what they would do that would be screwy. So I – but now it's going to be in the back of my head. Now I'm going to be like, oh, no, what could they possibly do?
I could see them doing something with, like, R-Truth or something, you know, on Raw maybe. But something like that, I think they could pull off maybe. But that's about it. Hopefully it's not
something minor.
Somebody like The Rock.
Something minor.
Yeah, something minor.
Nothing
exactly.
That's going to be like, nothing that's going to be like, oh, by the way, April Fools, it's not The Rock versus Cody Rhodes. It's The Rock versus, or it's not Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes. It's The Rock versus Roman Reigns. I don't think it's going to be to that
right.
level. So,
No.
All right, Zach, we got a couple of rapid-fire emails, and then we'll close up shop for the week. Azan has an email. He says, how do you feel about Dijak's recent work and fan support, and what do you expect from him in the coming months? So Dijak was reported to be in that triple threat at Stand and Deliver coming up. Dijak just feels like – don't get me wrong, I like him in the ring, but his promos and stuff just feel so forced. Like it doesn't feel authentic. I don't feel like we're getting anything close to authentic, and I think that hurts.
Yeah, it really does, and I agree. Yeah, like, I don't know what his future is. He seems like, to me, he's like the, you know, the quadruple A baseball player, where it's like, you're not a major leaguer, but you're too good for triple A. So if only there was this other level that you could play at, but there's not. And so he's kind of stuck in that limbo of like, well, if you go up to the main roster, I don't know that there's like a real good place for him, and he hasn't shown like the capacity to really build out a good character that is authentic and that has some sticking ability and that has some, you know, where you could look at it and go, yeah, you could see that on Raw week to week. And I suppose like this gimmick that he's in now, you could see up there, but not in, to me, it wouldn't be in like a meaningful way. It'd be very much in a, you know,
be with the Karrion Kross group. That's what it feels like.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, right. Bingo. That's a really good comparison. Yes, I think that's exactly where he'd land. And so, I mean, look, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I guess, you know, WWE has to have talents like that. But, you know, in terms of grading how he'd do, I don't see it in him at this point.
Number two, based on the reports that the Motor City Machine Guns are finished with TNA, where do you see them going? AEW, maybe? I mean, that's kind of the land of tag teams. I don't see WWE. You know, maybe they go to Japan. I don't know. It's not really a good time for American wrestlers in Japan because the yen is so weak compared to the dollar. So I'm not sure that New Japan is even going to be in the market for wrestlers like that coming over. So it really does seem like WWE or AEW are the options, and I just don't see them. You know, maybe with Triple H, maybe it's different, but I just don't see them in WWE. I see them much more as AEW. And in fact, I'm surprised when we had the AEW TNA partnership, I'm surprised they didn't get used more. I think they were used once maybe, but I was surprised they weren't used more in that exchange.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. Like, if you look at how, you know, WWE just, like, works their tag team wrestlers, I just don't – like, they'd be a good get. They'd be a good little get. But I also don't know what kind of impact they'd have. And, you know, the Usos aren't a tag team anymore, and obviously that'd be one of the matches that you'd ultimately, like, you'd want to see at some point. So, like, I just – the structure isn't great for, you know, tag teams in WWE. So, to me, like – as interesting as it might be to see the two of those guys in WWE or in NXT, AEW, I think, is where you see them go. I mean, I think that there's matches for them to have there, you know, with the Young Bucks, with FTR, you know, stuff that they could do with the House of Black or the Acclaim. Like, I mean, there's just all sorts of possibilities. And as you said, they didn't really milk that crossover with them at all outside of like some, you know, appearances that really were like unpromoted. If I were a betting person in wrestling, that's exactly where I'd go. And I, I'd be pretty, I feel like I'm confident in that. Like, it just makes sense, I think, for them to head there.
The only thing that gives me pause about them not going to WWE is, yeah, WWE has lost out on the last three big free agents to AEW, that being Will Ospreay, yeah. Mercedes Moné, and Okada. And perhaps there's a feeling from, you know, Triple H, a very competitive guy. Perhaps there's a feeling that, hey, we need to get back on the board. You know, even if it's just the Motor City Machine Guns, we've got to show that we're still a destination. I mean, so I don't even know if that attitude would exist. But if it does, you know, maybe that changes the equation on how hard they push for the Machine Guns in WWE.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, good point. And it's your point, too. Like, you know, they – I mean, who knows what – you know, it's a fun time to, like, look at the WWE product because, you know, Triple H is at the helm and, you know, there's not, like, a complete body of work there and, like, how he thinks about stuff. And so maybe his plan is to, like, reinforce the tag division, you know, where with Vince it would be like, well, obviously that's not going to happen in here. That's, you know, maybe yeah. It's a little bit different. So I wouldn't put a WWE run off the table. It's just – I just think AEW is more natural. But it's a good point.
Yeah. Azan, third question. I like to bring up idea of wins and losses. Over the past year, there's been a point of conversation involving Chris Jericho not getting anyone over by losing to them in AEW. But at the same time, John Cena lost two big matches last year to Austin Theory and Solo Sikoa. Now at Mania this year, Austin is playing sidekick to Grayson Waller, and Solo is in the background of the Bloodline. No question there, but it does seem like, you know, is John Cena getting off the hook a little bit here for the losses that he's taken not really helping? I mean, I don't think that's on John Cena. I mean, he's lost to these guys and then had to leave. So it's not like John Cena himself is still around holding these guys down after losing to them. That's on the booking. And so I'm not sure that it's an apples-to-apples comparison with Jericho, who is around full-time, versus John Cena, who's coming in to you know, I think in his mind, ideally, give some rub to these younger guys. But from there, it's got to be the bookers that take over and decide how to capitalize on those victories.
Well, 100%. I mean, look, if you look at John Cena, you know, Austin Theory, that's one thing. That didn't work out. And I think that booking was a major issue there. I think Theory was an issue there, too. It just didn't click. And I don't think you're going to bat a thousand on everything. But Solo Sikoa, I mean, there's still a lot of equity there. I mean, he's not somebody that –
that was a long-term play. I think that loss was a long-term play.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like, he's still, like, very much like a work in progress. He's still, you know, involved in, like, the biggest, you know, biggest angles and the biggest storylines that they do. So I think that the ink isn't dry on Solo Sikoa yet. And as far as Chris Jericho goes, I mean, like, say what you will about Chris Jericho, and there's definitely a lot to say in the ring and outside of the ring. But I don't know. I kind of think he gets a bit of a bad rap as far as that goes. I mean, because, again, you're not going to hit on everybody that he works with to try to put over. You're just not. But, you know, look, he had a huge feud with MJF when the company was started or near that time. MJF turned into be one of the biggest stars that AEW's had. I mean, I don't think that the Jericho – I think that, like, it's not that I don't think MJF would have survived as a top guy without Jericho, but that certainly helped matters. I think Orange Cassidy is somebody you could look at. I had a long feud with Jericho. That is now kind of renowned as like an AEW guy. And so yeah, for every MJF, there's who's a good example of somebody that it didn't work out with. I'm trying to think. There's a one on the tip of my tongue that I just can't quite. What?
Action Andretti.
Action Andretti. That's who it is. For every Action Andretti, there's, you know, there's other people that are like, okay, that did do well working with him. So I don't know how it's going to go with Hook, but I also think it's a bit unreasonable to ask him to hit a home run with every single person. But there's some, you know, there's some misses and there's some hits with them too.
And our final email, this is from JB from Detroit. His first question, if the Lesnar association with the McMahon lawsuit and the Punk injury both never happened, how much different would Mania look? I imagine we'd have Lesnar, Gunther, and Punk Seth, but how would that affect everything else on the card? I mean, I don't know that it really would. You know, you wouldn't have, you know, Sami Zayn versus Gunther, but I don't know that Sami Zayn would have had a big role anyway if Lesnar had taken his spot. Punk Rollins, you'd have to do something with Drew McIntyre. Obviously, you wouldn't have the Bloodline versus Cody and Seth, but you know, maybe you do Drew McIntyre versus Sami Zayn. Maybe you just wrap those two up, and that's it's as simple as that. But how different do you think it would look with Lesnar and Punk in the fold here? Because obviously that changed a lot of stuff on top.
Yeah, oh yeah, it definitely did. I mean, I don't think that outside of like Sami Zayn and Gunther, obviously that match wouldn't happen. The big one that like would that you'd want to see kind of what the butterfly effect would have been would be the tag match. Would be like, okay, WWE pivots away from Roman versus Rock. They go with Cody and Roman on night two. How do you integrate the Rock into a night one match with Cody and Roman Reigns? Like that would be the big one because, you know, like Drew joining Cody. I mean, I guess you could maybe have done that, like, but not really because he was like pretty far down the road on this, like on this heel turns, but maybe you could have done just like, you know, Cody, look, I can't trust anybody else. I need you to do this. And you don't like Roman or The Rock either. Like whatever. I think you could have gotten there potentially, but it certainly wouldn't have been seamless.
Could you tell the same story they're telling with Seth and in the tag match only with CM Punk basically playing the Drew McIntyre role?
Yeah, that's the question. I don't know that works. I mean, you could try it. But I think you'd want Punk and Seth to be separate. Like you'd want it to be like its own standing thing and really like treat that as like a true main event. But then again, like would it be a main event if Rock was going to have to work night one? So yeah, it would have changed like the top, what The Rock does. Like, or would they even have pivoted away from Rock and Roman at all? Like, maybe like, you know, if Cody, or like if Punk
maybe
and
Cody
Seth
Drew.
Is still happening, maybe it's Cody Drew. Yeah, like maybe that's what they do. Because, and almost like that's probably more likely given all the circumstances, just to like stay the course on Rock Roman. But that's interesting. It's interesting kind of puzzle to undo because there were so many moving parts in like a 2-week period. But yeah, I don't think a lot of it changes outside of like what Rock does once they pivot
from
Cody.
Yeah, that's the big key. Yeah, that's the big key, I think. Number two from JB, will we get a new Bloodline member at WrestleMania? I'm thinking Tama Tonga. If so, how will the complexion of the Bloodline change, and how will it look by SummerSlam? He seems the most likely because, you know, he's reported to have a WWE deal, the most likely to join the Bloodline. I think, you know, Jacob Fatu is out there too, but I think that's less likely of a scenario. So I think here's the thing. The Bloodline. Not at ringside. So Cody and Seth win. So the Bloodline is barred from ringside. Tama Tonga comes out. Not technically part of the Bloodline as a group that we know. I mean, could he come out and interfere and have it not go against that stipulation? That's going to upset a lot of people, I'm sure. Maybe they think that the debuting of a new big superstar is going to lessen that or soften that blow. But I think he would be the most likely to debut. I'm not saying it is likely because I think you got to end with Cody winning the title. And I don't think unless it's a post-match attack, I don't think you debut a new member of the Bloodline in a match that the Bloodline loses. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me unless he debuts in the tag match the night before. I don't know. I think there's an argument to be made that he should be part of the Bloodline, maybe even debut at WrestleMania, but it's hard for me. Assuming that Cody wins, it's hard for me to picture a way to do it and really have an impact and still have Cody win.
That's the thing. That's the problem. That's the problem with, I mean, I think, yes, he is the most likely if they're going to add to the Bloodline. I think he is a likely candidate. But like you said, I mean, really like this is, you know, assuming Cody wins, you know, and that's where they go on this, that's got to be the story. Like, that's got to be the lead story. Like, and that's got to be the only story. And so it's like, if you try to like it's like his debut is dead on arrival. If he shows up, tries to interfere, Cody beats him up and wins the title anyway. It's like, you know, there's really no going back for you if you're Tamatanga. So I would hold off. I mean, I just wouldn't do it at WrestleMania. I would just finish the story with Cody, wrap that up, get that done. And then whatever happens in the next chapter of the Bloodline, if it's Roman versus Rock, you know, you can debut him months prior to that. That would be my approach. I don't think you want to take away from the main story, which is Cody, but you also don't want to overshadow, like, a debut you're excited about too, and both of those things would happen if he debuted at WrestleMania.
The third question for JB. So far, it doesn't seem like as if Mercedes Moné is making too much of a difference for AEW ratings. Will her first televised match be more of a needle mover, as she is known more for her in-ring performances? Yeah, I'm a little surprised that she hasn't moved the numbers in any really significant way. So I wouldn't expect her in-ring debut to do it, even though she is known more for her wrestling. I just don't see that. If she isn't a draw with her first appearance that everybody knew was coming, even though it wasn't hyped ahead of time, I have a hard time seeing her first match really do that. Am I wrong there?
No, you're right on the money. You're right on the money. I mean, that's unfortunate if you're Tony Khan. And Mercedes Moné trying to, you know, be a star that moves the needle in that way. But yeah, I mean, look, just like with CM Punk, you know, if you're, you know, the high level of your kind of instant impact is on that first appearance, like, you know, and it kind of just goes down from there, like match or not. And that's not a knock. It's just the reality. And it's like that for anybody. Everybody's going to try to come out and see kind of what happens at the beginning and then go from there. And so, you know, yeah, the water level didn't rise with that initial debut. So there just really isn't a reason to think that a match would. I think now at this point with Mercedes Moné and viewership and as far as ratings go, it's more so just having good performances week in and week out, you know, building her as a big star. And so hopefully a year from now, you know, you're able to pinpoint, like, okay, when Mercedes wrestles matches, like, it's a big deal. It's a ratings mover. But now I don't think you're going to get that bump.
Final question from JB. Punk is going to be live on Raw tomorrow for the first time in a while. What will his role at Mania be? As always, love the show and go VIP, vip.pwtorch.com to become a member. Yeah, I mean, you know, Raw's in Chicago. Great time to remind fans that CM Punk still does, in fact, exist. But is it – do you see them bringing Punk back because he has a role on WrestleMania? Do you think if they don't have anything planned for WrestleMania, is bringing Punk out here even a good idea? Or do you think he just needs to come out and address the constant battering that he's getting from Drew McIntyre on the mic?
Yeah, I mean, so he said in that vignette, I believe, that he was going to be at WrestleMania. Now, I don't know, that can mean a lot of things. And, like, there's certainly plausible deniability that, oh, I am at WrestleMania. I'm not on screen, but I'm here. And I wouldn't put it past CM Punk to kind of put that out there. But I think you hit the nail on the head. I think you bring him out there because it's Chicago, going to get a big pop. It's like WrestleMania season, so you assume that he's going to, you know, maybe move the needle a little bit for Raw, get some eyes on the product. And then that's exactly what I'd do. I would just remind everybody that he's around, remind everybody that he's going to be coming back in a handful of months. And then, you know, threaten Drew McIntyre. Like, you keep talking like that, and when I come back, and it's going to be soon, you know, I'll be there, you know, to address that. I just think you just want to keep that on the side burner. And I think this is a way to do that. As far as CM Punk's WrestleMania involvement, like, I could see him, you know, inducting Paul Heyman into the Hall of Fame, you know, and being a part of that. If he's healthy, you know, maybe he can, I don't know, hit a GTS on a celebrity in the middle of the ring or something like that. I don't know that you want to do that with him either. So I think this is more of like an appearance just to have one. And, you know, next week, I think people will largely forget that it happened. That's my guess.
Yeah, I think so too. I wouldn't be surprised if he confronts Drew McIntyre if they have some sort of stare down or you know, they go
right
at each other on the mic or Punk calls Drew out or something like that, because that's clearly the match they're setting up for when he gets back. So I think that would be the way to go on that. Zach, thanks for staying overtime with us here tonight. Lots of calls, lots of emails. It is WrestleMania season after all, so appreciate everybody's contributions here to the show. Before I let you go ahead and plug your Brass Ring Media empire.
Well, thank you, Greg, and thanks for having me on the show, and thanks to you know, everybody for the calls and for the emails. If you want to hear more of what I'm doing, yeah, check us out on Brass Ring Media. We've got a couple different ways you can subscribe to our stuff for free. We have a YouTube channel with daily YouTube videos that go up, but also live YouTube shows all throughout the week, Monday through Thursday, that you can check out and interact with from myself and a couple others on the team. You know, hit the notification button, hit subscribe so you know when we're live. We do all sorts of shows covering, you know, current event-based wrestling, a little bit of a look back too, and a couple of them. So I think there's something there for everybody. But a lot of it within the tone of how we just talked about wrestling, you know. So a lot of Torch-style talk. I think you guys will, if you like this show, you'll enjoy what we do there. So you can subscribe on YouTube. You can also subscribe to our written work on our Substack newsletter page. Just search Brass Ring Media Substack. We have daily columns going up, feature stories or just kind of show reviews and everything in between as well. So you can check that out on Substack. And if you like what you see and you like what you hear and you want a little bit more, you can become a Brass Ring Media member. And that comes with special members-only podcasts once a week. All of our pay-per-view and PLE review shows are for our members. We'll be doing a couple of those, a whole bunch of those over WrestleMania weekend. So now's a really good time to try us out. I hope that you do. We will certainly do all we can to earn your business. And you can find how to become a member and everything that you get with it on Patreon, patreon.com/brassringmedia. If you've forgotten all of that already, just follow us on Twitter, Twitter X, whatever you want to call it, @brassring_media, and we'll remind you and have links to all of our work and everything that goes up daily. So you can follow us over there, and I hope you do.
Sounds good, Zach. It's been a pleasure catching up with you and talking wrestling and the busiest part of the season. So thank you for coming on the show this week, and we'll have you on again soon, I'm sure, to talk about the latest in wrestling.
Sounds good, Greg. Thanks very much, and once again, looking forward to your UFL work as well. I enjoyed it last year, and so I'm pumped for another dose.
Appreciate the plug, as always. UFLboard.com is where you can find my UFL work, @GregMParks. I tweet out the links to all my columns, not only for the Torch, but also for my UFL work as well, @GregMParks. So thank you again for joining us. And until next time, if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.